Moncrief on News Talk.
Barbara and Declan join us once again to bring you
your
weekly dose of wisdom.
I've just sent that text.
Have you? I don't think if somebody, I don't know what the scenario would be.
Like, I wonder. Will I test it?
Well, you have to get them to call
to ring
you.
Me as well.
Yeah, I don't think we can arrange that somehow.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, I don't know.
Shame.
I don't know if either of you are sports fans. Here's your first question. Myself and my girlfriend have been together for 6 months now. Everything is going great, but a recent development has perplexed me, occasionally aroused, and mostly concerned me. I play rugby for our local club, and I met her through the club. She wants us to have relations when I get home from training, while I'm still unshowered. When I haven't been at training, she will sometimes ask me to put on my jersey. If I warn her about how muddy my gear is, she gets even more excited. At first, I was keen to ride this wave of enthusiasm, no pun intended. But now I'm worried that she is just hot for me for my rugby skills and not for me as a man. What should I do?
But what is a man?
What is a man?
He doesn't play rugby.
There he is.
I mean, I had to read this a couple of times and I was still baffled at the end of it. It adds a whole new meaning to dirty sex. And it's not something I understand. I don't understand why anybody would be turned. And I think he's flattering himself a little bit too much by thinking it's his rugby skills.
Yeah,
I don't think it's the rugby skills, because if it was that, she'd still be able to say, come in now, you lovely big hunk of a rugby player, but have a shower and put your kit in the laundry and talk me through every single thing you did on the pitch,
blow by blow.
Yes. Very good.
Let's have a mall.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's actually not happening. What I have a question, which is, does she get turned on by other situations that might get mucky? Like if you went out for a winter hike up the mountains and you came home with mucky boots.
Is it just rugby-centered sex she's into?
Exactly.
Or dirt.
Or dirt. Would she like to roll around in the mud?
Yeah, but he met her through the club. So, I don't know. I just put a picture in my head that she's out there every Saturday or Sunday or whatever.
Drooling over the rugby guys.
Looking at all those big chunky thighs getting all muddy and going, oh my God, I love this. And so it could be him, could one, anyone.
What bothers me most?
She'll move on to the next one.
And I don't know, but what bothers me most about this that when I was kind of picturing this, which you should never do in your head, all I could think of was the bed linen. Do you know?
Who's washing that?
If he's coming in still mucky and sweaty and they're getting down to it.
I know, according to Vogue Williams, that'll come out as a 40 degree wash. No problem at all.
Specifically that.
You wouldn't be too worried about it.
Change the bed every time. You'd be washing all the time and drying and all the rest of it. No. Yeah. I don't get that.
I didn't think it was actually literally the muck focused kind of thing. But I think there's a weirdness going on here, because all that she's really showing is that she has a particular kind of a kink, that her vibe is that she likes
mud.
Rugby people.
I think it's rugby people.
I think the mud is additional. If he tells her how muddy the gear is, she gets even more excited, but she'll make do with just, you know, sweaty and rugby gear.
Right.
I think it kind of cuts. I think the same thing happens across a lot of sports people, is that they're doing a sport, but they kind of, you know, they get extra attention based on if they're good looking or certain sports would be the kind of sports that would draw a certain kind of attention.
Because it's kind of like hyper macho, kind of like rugby, because it's all about tackling.
For some viewers, may they be male or female, that version of
I'm waiting for the word.
I'm trying to. What is the word?
I don't know.
That version of masculinity, okay, that version of the man is on show, and that's what they're attracted to. And I don't see that as a problem. I don't see that as a problem, except for this person, because it's been distilled down to its simplest form, and he's now been triggered by, all I am to you is a sexual object who runs around manning it around a football pitch or a rugby pitch, and you have a problem with that. When in fact, if you flipped it over, you know, versions of femininity, he'd probably be perfectly attracted to a woman who presents herself in a certain way, blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of normal, because we all do that.
I'm just wondering, does rugby have a kind of a sexual subtext? Because you know that.
Well, you're just
thing?
Wondering that now.
Yeah.
I wonder. Like yeah.
A group of men put yeah. their hands under each other's scrotums that's and push really so, hard.
That's yeah. the thing I've just realised.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. I don't watch sport, and that suddenly has come into my head.
As I was saying to Ron McGarrel.
Will I go home now? Will I go? I'm useless on this. It, is yeah. that, is that, it's does not that turn people on?
Is that, though?
Yeah, the listeners are much use, really.
No,
you can
are
have
we.
Sex in other places than a bed, Barbara.
I know,
so somebody,
I know that.
I know,
it's
but
make anywhere.
Oh, my, you'd never get it out of the rug.
Or the kitchen table.
Oh,
like,
my
where
God.
Are you going to have it? The only place I'd be happy having that kind of sex would be in the shower.
Yeah, rugby lads usually have money. She's probably with them for that. honest to God, lad, what is becoming of the men of Ireland? My girlfriend wants to have mad passionate sex with me. I'm so confused. What do I do? Honestly, what is happening to us?
Yeah. He has a point.
Okay,
yeah,
fair
that's
point.
The best point.
But, like, maybe in a variety of different outfits rather than just, you know, let the guy wear a dress occasionally.
I think he wants us to tell him that it's his rugby prowess and his rugby physique and all of that is what's doing it for her here.
That's what he's worried about. You see, because presumably when you're a rugby player, sooner or later, you know,
stop.
You age out, you get a bit fat.
And you have to become a television presenter.
Sure, yes. And then she's like not, she mightn't be interested
but
anymore.
But that happens whether you're playing rugby or no matter what you're doing. You
well,
age
that's
out,
true.
You get fat.
That's true.
So, like, that's coming down the tracks anyway.
Okay, yeah.
So I wouldn't worry about that. But I don't know what he wants
if you're
going to
be playing a sport where being fat is okay, I think rugby's the one where you can kind of get away with a few inches
extra
here and there. Yeah. So, you know, relax.
Okay, we don't see the problem basically, yeah. except for the sheets.
I think he's making a problem because I think it is down to
he's feeling
objectified. The me versus the idea of man me, and that's it. That's a kind of a theoretical, a kind of a philosophical challenge for him. But he needs to just get on with it.
Do they not have showers at the rugby club? We always showered and went to the bar for a Lucozade after training. Of course, if they train on an all-weather pitch, there would be sweat but no mud. Okay, we're deep into the weeds of the technicalities of this now.
Is there Aren't there such a thing as an all-weather rugby pitch?
Yeah, they're like plastic.
I know that, yeah. but I've only ever seen them for like...
apparently they're not very
the
nice to play on, but yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you have to wear your runners, you can't wear your rugby boots.
See, is there a future in this relationship? If she seems to be only exclusively interested in having sex with him when he's dressed like a rugby player.
Well, as long as he keeps playing rugby and getting sweaty and mucky, I'd see,
well,
yeah.
Well, that's if
grand.
He's a professional rugby player, but say during the week when he comes back from driving the Lewis in his Lewis man's outfit, how will that go down?
Lewis, well, no, it's the security guys always think on the Lewis look very macho as well, don't they? They're very
you know, actually, you see more actually women driving the dart, I don't know if that's the term, driving the dart.
Yeah, they love to drive the dart. Yeah,
I think that's kind of sexy, a woman driving a
driving
train.
Yeah. Driving a train. You think that's sexy?
I do, yeah.
I got on a bus
I think
recently.
Freud would have a lot to say to you about that.
Yeah. I'm a mess.
Just the dart now, would it be like, would that apply?
No,
to?
It's just that I see them more in the dart. I
doesn't take the
what do you think about the bus drivers? The bus drivers too.
Yeah. I got on a bus the other day and there was a very, very petite little woman driving the bus. And I was in awe of her driving that big, huge bus.
You know, it has power steering.
Because I think that's.
She doesn't have to push it, Barbara.
She doesn't have to push it, but it's still a big yoke.
It is a big yoke.
Unlike train drivers and Lewis drivers who just kind of like it goes on a track, you don't have to. And
it's still a big yoke.
But they have to go through junctions and bike lanes and pull in and go. I think driving a bus is way more complicated than driving a Lewis or a Dart.
And that tension you have between the motorists won't give you space, but you have to still get the bus
going.
And you
have to pull in behind the cyclists who's cycling very slowly and leave enough space for them. Plus then you have people. Then if people just not pay, they've an awful lot of stress. I think bus drivers are...
So they've no time to be, you know...
Anyway, lads, we have to move on. I can't concentrate now. My mother and I haven't spoken in a couple of months and I don't know whether I should speak to her before Christmas or just leave it. We have never had an ultra close relationship, but about 10 years ago, she had an affair with another man and left my father. Over the last number of years, I've come to accept what happened and I understand that she is not necessarily 100% to blame for the demise of my parents' marriage. However, over the years, her outlandish and unreasonable behaviour was always ignored by my father in an effort to keep the peace. Up until August last, we had quite a pleasant relationship. That was until one night when we went out to dinner. I said something that she didn't like. It was a mundane comment, but something triggered her and she stormed out at me in a packed restaurant. I wasn't even upset because I'm so used to this kind of thing from her That said, I felt like I needed to take a stand. I used to have to accept this treatment as a child, but I don't at 35. My siblings say I just need to accept her for who she is and have a surface level relationship with her. I think if I do, I'll be backing down and breaking my own boundaries. Any advice?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because, this writer talks about how she didn't have an ideal childhood. And I was thinking about that, the word ideal, and how it can cause people so many problems when the idealized version of whatever relationship or whatever circumstance that they think they should be, you know, having isn't matched by the realities. And here, what seems to be happening is that her mother is turning out to be a real person with real flaws and real problems, as opposed to the kind of idealized version of a mother who bends over backwards with, you know, unconditional love to provide you with everything and, you know, puts you first. That's not the kind of mother that this person has received in the lottery of life. And so therefore, obviously, that's bringing up kind of emotional problems, because relationships are always kind of full of tensions and pitfalls and stuff like that. I think in this situation, what's happened, it seemed to be fine because she was managing her own anxieties within her own side of the relationship. But as an adult, has realised that a lot of that emotional labour was happening on her side, and wasn't being reciprocated by her mum, who's just seems to be just doing her own thing and being her own person and standing up for herself and whatever. And because sometimes people can do stuff for themselves and that can be interpreted as being an aggressive act towards somebody else, when in fact, you know, they're just doing their own thing because they're only seeing the world from their own perspective. So I think from this person's point of view, her siblings are basically saying, don't cause any more hassle, just kind of have a superficial relationship with this person. That isn't going to give this person what they seem to want, which is to have a more meaningful relationship with their mother. But I don't know whether the mother
is capable of
capable
that.
Of doing that for whatever reasons. And there could be loads of reasons why, you know, even mental health reasons why this person isn't able to step up to that particular plate. And that's where a certain kind of, it's not giving in and it's not breaking your boundaries. Yeah. It's more like acceptance, that you accept that the person that you have in your life isn't an ideal version, isn't this cartoon, you know, mama bear, and instead is the person that you've known and you've had a long-standing relationship with. And if you want to have them in your life, you have to decide to find a way to make that relationship work for both of you. And in that instance, that's the kind of superficial, maybe, that your sisters and brothers are talking about. Having a relationship that works for you can sometimes mean having to accept that the person who you're having that relationship isn't capable of delivering some of your needs that you might have to go somewhere else to get fulfilled.
I think that's a very comprehensive answer, and I would agree with most of it. There's a lot to unpack here, because when you read the letter, I also wonder why she started by telling us about the affair that her mother had, which she then says was the cause of the breakup of the marriage. Now, she said it then, years later, she realised it wasn't altogether the mother's fault. But it's like as if, and then things seemed to be kind of okay when she came to that realisation, until last August, when she said something out for dinner and the mother just stormed out and left her feeling embarrassed and rejected and numb and clearly very hurt.
Yeah.
So I think there is, as you say, a kind of an unrealistic expectation, even within the parameters of the fact that she says at the beginning they never have had a very close relationship. But I think maybe once she accepted that perhaps the mother wasn't the architect altogether on her own of the marriage's breakdown, that she then felt that she could have a relationship with her mother, until then the mother blew it up by walking out of the restaurant. As you say, there's an awful lot here that we don't know. And I would suspect that, you know, on the mother's end, there may be, as you said, kind of mental health issues that she might need some help with herself. But coming back to the daughter who wrote to us, one of the things about family, and we've said this a number of times before, is you can't kind of get away from them. Do you know what I mean? You're kind of, they'll always be in your orbit somewhere. So even if you've somebody within your family who is causing you stress or making you unhappy, you know, I think that the siblings' advice of kind of having a surface relationship can sometimes be the way to deal with that. Because you can't really totally cut off somebody in your family, because there'll be family events and there'll be, you know, siblings and
sure,
other yeah. people who will keep you in contact with knowing what's going on with that person, in this case, the mother. So I think also, as you said, to lower expectations a little bit around the, you know, what kind of relationship she can have with the mother, including, because the last line is, by the way, she still hasn't apologised for storming out of the restaurant. It's highly likely she's never going to apologise, because yeah. she sees it as something completely different from how this woman sees it. So I think the bottom line is, I think maybe to kind of do what the siblings say, is have a kind of surface relationship. Adjust your expectations. Don't expect her to apologise. You know, your relationship is never going to be super close. But at the same time, I think if you say, right, that's it, I never want to see her, I don't want her name mentioned, I'm never sure that that's a particularly good idea. I think if you can come to a place of acceptance yourself that your relationship is never going to be what you would ideally perhaps have liked it to be, and it is what it is. And
to also recognise that this person has been adjusting their perspective on their relationship with the mother anyway, as they've yes. been going along. They've already been implementing the skills that we're talking about. Mm. They change their mind, they've reevaluated, and they're making space. Sometimes it's a kind of a grief process when you realise that the person who you thought you were in a relationship with, or the friend you thought you had, or you know, whatever, that person was meant to be to you, isn't that person. Yeah. That can kind of come with an emotional kind yes. of process that you need to deal with yourself, and that's yeah. a new problem. Because at the end of the day, like you say, the realities of life mean, you know, excluding people can be the atomic kind of, the nuclear option. And it can yeah. seem kind of like an easy thing to do. But the reality of it is that it's never quite like
it's
that.
It's not as yeah. clear cut as any of that.
Yeah. No, and I think, not to pathologize from this distance, but, you know, the years of outlandish behavior, I used to accept this kind of thing as a child. So it sounds like this has been going on for a long time. And yeah. the person who wrote in knows how to conduct an adult relationship, but is maybe coming to the realization that her mother doesn't know how to conduct that kind of relationship for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah.
But as you say, it mightn't be a situation where the mother would even accept there's a problem.
No, that it's, exactly.
That it's, because that could be to bring up a whole lot of things for them, even yeah. if it's not that they there's a mental health issue or another reason. Specifically, it could just be a personality type.
I mean, yeah. the woman who wrote into us, it might be worth her looking at, maybe talking, you know, professionally to somebody as well, just to unpack stuff from the childhood, which perhaps yeah. is colouring and clouding her ability to kind of accept the mother for what she is.
Because sometimes the worst people to ask for family advice are your family.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The thing is, though, because this person started by saying that it's coming up to Christmas, and you can feel yeah. that kind of there's a rift there, and should yeah. I go and try and fix this? Because everybody wants to feel at Christmas, you know, because
at peace.
Cast a pall over everything.
Listen, yeah. the amount of families at Christmas who go, oh God, I'm going to have to see yeah. my mammy, my daddy, my sister, yeah. my brother, whoever, and they really annoy me or whatever. And you just, you know, I think most families have an element of like the rictus smile and the, how yeah. are you? It's nice to see you and happy Christmas, and I hope you're not staying for too long kind of thing going on. So, you know, none of us.
So should she try to do something, reach out to the mother before Christmas, even in a superficial way, even in a let's pretend that never happened way?
You see, I'm wondering, is it that she has, is it her that's not, I mean, it's quite likely that the mother is still ringing her the odd time or seeing
could
her the
be,
odd time.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the mother could be completely oblivious.
Yeah.
Mm. So if that is the case, I would just accept that for what it is.
I think the problem is that sometimes, particularly in a child-parent relationship, that a child can feel that stuff that happened when they were children, you know,
yeah.
means something, and it had an impact on me. And, yeah. and the imbalance in the power relationship means that you hold on to a lot of like blame and you know, anger or whatever it is. And sometimes those feelings can never be resolved
yeah.
except with the kind of an acceptance that's the way it went.
And I think the other thing that happens as you become an adult anyway, normally in your 30s, as this woman is, that you suddenly start to see that your parents are flawed and that they're just yeah. regular people who also very possibly had dysfunctional childhoods themselves.
Mm. True,
so,
indeed,
you know,
yeah.
it's none of this is straightforward, yeah. you know. And
it's,
I think given people,
life.
The circle of life, indeed.
Yeah. Someone says, I don't think this person wants a more meaningful relationship with a mother. I think they're being told they need to have a superficial relationship, but they actually don't even want that. They don't want anything to do with their mother. That's what I get from it, speaking from experience. Now, I must say, I got the opposite impression
yeah.
From that.
And you know, it is fine if somebody decides that they just can't for their own
mental health
boundaries and mental health deal and have a relationship with somebody. I'd never advise somebody to just suck it up and put up with that.
No, neither would
ever.
I.
But I do think, like you say, Sean, I think that this person is saying, in an ideal world, I want to live in, you know, over the rainbow, whatever.
Yeah, wouldn't we all? Really?
I think she's also waiting for the mother to realise that she upset her the last time they met and to apologise. And that's probably not going to happen.
Maybe asking for an apology might be like a thing to kind of get stopping on, well,
for
on
what?
The table.
And then start another row. The mother-child relationship is the most formative and emotional important relationship a child can have, says one person. That somebody else says there is hope for this person in that she realises that the pattern is not acceptable to others. And therefore, it's not multi-generation in that.
Yes.
That's true. That's true. My better half agreed to meet up for a date 14 years ago because she thought I was a rugby player. Going back to the previous question.
What are you?
Well, wasn't a rugby player. I share a small office with five other people. One of the team insists every day on bringing a packed fish lunch to work. She heats it in the microwave and then eats it in front of the rest of us at her desk. It's just an awful experience for all of us. We have asked her not to do this, but she says she's on a strict diet recommended by her doctor. One day it's kippers, another it'll be mackerel. Some days it's herring. It's like we're working down the docks. The fumes and putrid stink coming from her desk are enough to make me go and spend half an hour in the bathroom to avoid it. Sadly, we don't have a staff kitchen and it's so cold at the moment outside that not only can she not eat in the car park, but she doesn't want the windows opened in her office either because she gets very chilly. How do I manage this without handing in my notice?
I was gasped when I was reading this. I was thinking, you know, last week we were talking about, you know, having a relationship with somebody you work with and how, you know, you need to kind of be careful and you need to tell HR and all this. This to me seems a far bigger issue.
Yeah.
than possibly snugging your boss. Like the smell of fish, I think, as now I know I'm vegetarian now, but I have never, ever liked fish from the time I was very young. And it's the smell as well as the texture. But the smell of fish, I think there is absolutely nothing worse. Like they have my sympathy. I mean, the letter writer has said that they've asked the woman who's coming in with the fish sandwiches. Not to do it. And she said that, no, she has to do it because her doctor has put her on a diet. I'm not sure that any doctor would put you on a diet.
That
involves you bringing fish into work every single day and eating it every single day. But that said, she said there's no staff kitchen. So I'm assuming maybe there isn't a HR person either or a HR department.
Yeah.
But surely there is like even a cupboard or is there a corner of the office in which you could say, look, Mary, the smell of the fish is actually making me nauseous. Like I'm actually feeling ill because I really hate it. Or you could always say you're allergic to it or something. And could you mind sitting over in that corner over there and try and screen it off a little bit and eat your sandwich over there and then come back and rejoin us when you're finished eating your stinky sandwiches? Or is there a corridor that she could be asked to go out in the corridor and eat her? I don't think anybody should have to put up with the smell of fish.
No, well, I agree.
And I mean, if she doesn't cooperate, then, you know, go out and buy a load of incense or
somebody
oil
text
burners
and say, OMG, I have the same issue with lunch issues in work. Be careful what you say. It could end in a discrimination case.
What?
You can't be seen to be anti-fish these days.
Can it not be
anti-fish? No, the wokerati will have you cancelled in no time.
It used to be egg sandwiches. I love an owl egg sandwich.
God.
Yeah.
And I know, egg sandwiches like are not usually welcome. Anywhere.
True. Is it not illegal to eat at your desk under health and safety at work at, especially if hot desking? I don't know.
If that's
the case, everyone in Newstalk every day of the week breaks the law.
I'm just eating at the
moment. You'll never take me alive, sucker. What can she do? She says there's five people in the office, okay. One of them is Fish Girl. Is the other three people, are they objecting as strenuously as the person who wrote into us? If they're not, then
I think that's kind
difficult.
Of where the issue is. It seems to me this is somebody who's dug their heels in and said, I'm not for moving on this issue because maybe the way it was approached. Because I can't imagine anybody who works in a shared environment being so, just having such neck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if they're the kind of person that's so, you know, has such neck, I'd start bringing in really strong air fresheners and be spraying them in the direction.
Although, seriously, if you've somebody who's prone to migraines, that kind of stuff is actually seriously lethal.
The
air fresheners, any of those kind of artificial.
But I mean, isn't it the same thing, though?
No, get an oil burner or get incense or something, because that won't trigger usually other people.
I don't know if you're spraying them in our face.
Oh, you're going to spray
no,
it in our
I
face?
No, I think that's more think HR that's, type stuff.
You yeah. have a HR department.
What about, you see, if they all object to it, they can just bring in the old face masks. And every time she starts eating, everybody puts on a face mask and waits for it to finish.
It just seems to me, though, that if you ask somebody to not
sit
do
in
something,
the corner
I have to
insist.
Eat fish.
Well, then go and sit right over there in the corner, because honestly, the smell is making the rest of us feel ill. Like, the smell of fish would genuinely make me feel nauseous.
I wonder
and
if it's like if it's triggering enough to get you off, like, you know.
Could somebody throw up?
Or
yeah, projectile vomiting on her would help. Yes.
Oh, hang on. So vomiting on her is okay, but spraying a bit of plaid. You're so weird.
You go. There's your answer. Definitively solved. Barbara and Declan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.